This is Phil Perrin. And I am driving home. I'm also leaning over to make sure the little light... Okay, good. It's on. We're recording. Good. I just love it when I get all the way home and discover I haven't been recording. I'm about to turn on the air conditioning. It's warming up in the Ozarks. Summer. Love summer. Grew up in the Philippines. I like to be warm. I was going to say something. I forgot what it was. Oh, I know what it was. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Anyways, it is episode 380, I think. 380. Yeah. So we're rounded up to 400. And then once we get to 400, it's not going to be too long before we will be at 8 years worth of podcast. Because 8 years worth of podcast are 8 times 52, which is 416. So anyways, unbelievable. Moving towards 2,000. That's our goal. 2,000 podcasts that no one listens to. Because my son-in-law said that he would listen to them all after I die. That was his pledge to me. So that has inspired me to do 2,000 podcasts. Just as a way to give him a wink and a nod after I'm dead. Anyways, all is well. It's been a good week at work. Got a lot of good things accomplished. We're moving forward on some big decisions we have to make, so all seems fine. Been doing some investigations and mashing some data together and just trying to get prepared for the next things coming, but we've gotten some word about our user community that they're excited for the things that are coming next, so that's good, you know. It's always good when people are excited about what you're doing and what's coming next, so... all that seems to be going well. As far as the writing goes, this week I've just been engaged in the read-through. Last week I did finish up the Kindle version and the EPUB version and got everything uploaded and talked to my beta readers, and they went out and left reviews for me out on Amazon.com. So that's all taken care of. I ordered books for the people who did that, got the books delivered. So that's all taken care of. And so now I am officially on book 5. Although there's always some overlap, and then this week I hopped back to do a read-through up to where I was. I was on like 250 pages, I think, something like 250 pages. And I had done the 10,000 words a week for 8 weeks. I had hit 80,000 words, and then shortly after I had accomplished that goal, I had gone back and done some editing on what's called the characters and terminology section and cut that way down and then added in a timeline to make it a little bit easier to maintain as we move forward. And in so doing, I had lost 2,500 words or so. In the process of doing my read-through, I've gained back a little bit on that. So I'm actually only at about 78,000 words, somewhere there. And these books, they run 130, 140. I've got plenty of story to tell. In fact, that's actually a concern that I have at this point, is I've already rolled back some of the story I was going to tell and pushed it into the next book, but I may still have too much story to tell, so we'll see, because there are a couple of things I'd like to hit in this book before I wrap up, but, excuse me, I don't know, we'll see. Fascinating thing. So much fun. It's just so much fun. But anyways, got the deliveries done today of the free books I was giving out. I have just a couple more. I'm done with that. I'm almost finished with my read-through. I think I'm on page 225 of 250. So I'm hoping to get that done tonight so I can hunker down tomorrow and start writing the new stuff. Come Sunday, I'll be back in the sprint again. So I'll be trying to put down 10,000 words a week for the next 7 weeks, because that should take me to the end of the book. But I think I've got enough action and stuff left that I think that's going to be okay. Because we're in the crisis now, you know. All the balls are in the air, and we're trying to get it resolved. So this is usually when things start cooking, you know. It's a little bit easier to write some of this stuff because all the characterizations are in place and everything that I've set up to get me to the crisis points is all set up. And now it's a matter of actually resolving the crisis points. That's not to say that I actually know everything that's going to happen in the next 200 pages, 2,500 pages of the book, because I don't. But at least I know kind of where I'm going. It's really interesting. It's because I sort of know where I'm going, but it's usually better when I get there, which is fun. Because I'm not only telling the stories as I'm going, I'm actually finding out about the story. I'm like, oh, so that's why, you know? It's just a very interesting exercise. Anyways, so that's well, all is well, all is well, all is well. I can't remember if last week I mentioned that they're looking at Praise Assembly. They're interviewing, or interviewed last week, a worship leader couple. And so they did a really good job, and they seem really nice, and they have a lot of capabilities. It's good. It seems good. I'm completely out of the whole negotiation thing. I don't know how all that's going, but I'm sure we'll hear there at some point how it's going. So it was fun, though. It was fun. I ran sound for them both services, and my wife got to play with them on Sunday morning early, and then they led Sunday 10:30 service, as opposed to the 8 o'clock service. They did a great job. Everything was good. So we'll see. It's fun. Anyways, this week, I had actually, a couple of weeks, come across an article. And, I mean, as soon as I read the title of the article, I thought, oh, yeah, I want to read this. Because having grandkids, this is an issue that I have wondered about with them. And then I read the article and I thought, well, that's interesting. The article really doesn't come to any conclusions, unfortunately, because there's not enough data yet. And then I came across a YouTube video that was talking about this whole idea as well. And I thought, well, I'm just gonna kind of put those two things together and then see what we can come up with after it's all said and done. The name of the article that I came across was "The Secret Lives of Screen Addicted Teens." And it's, you know, it's talking about kids who are a whole bunch of kids now, who's basically, they spend their days with their head down in their cell phones if they have any chance to do so. You know, maybe when they're at school, they're not supposed to be looking at it, and so they're only sneaking looks at it, or they're getting their phones taken away if the teachers find them. But a lot of times, you know, as soon as they leave school, for parents who are harried and trying to get things done and running around, I mean, it's kind of a godsend that they can just, their kid puts their headphones on and, you know, is lost in that world. But then the question is, what is going on long term? What is really happening in their psyche? And maybe just because I'm an old geezer, I find it troubling. Because before I even start going into this, I have some just basic principles for how do you identify what is something that is driven by flesh and what is something that is driven by spirit. And one of those mechanisms that I use is that spirit breeds community, flesh breeds isolation. Now, at first glance, some might say, well, but look how much community is birthed with something like Facebook or Snapchat or any of those social, Instagram, any of those social media programs. Everybody's on there with their friends, they're looking at each other's stuff, they're liking it, they're responding, you know, they're having communications, blah, 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 blah. But this YouTube video, I think, brought out a couple of really good points, and we'll get to that in a minute. Because there are qualities to this existence on the social net that are very different than qualities that you would encounter if you were sitting down having a meal across from someone with your phones shoved off to the side, or you were out on a hike in the woods and just talking about life, the universe, and everything. There are qualities that are very, very different. So anyways, let's just run through the article and give some examples of what life is like for these screen-obsessed teens, and then we'll talk about the YouTube video a little bit, bring out those points, and then we'll just wrap up. Anyway, so the story is told of this young gal. She's coming out of school. You know, she drops into a car. Her dad's come to pick her up. He says, you know, ready to go, but she doesn't even respond because she's already on Instagram. So she's running through stuff on Instagram and looking, and then she's opening BuzzFeed, and she's looking through the news, and she opens a couple more apps, looking through it, like, goes, you know, blah, 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 you know, opens Snapchat, sees how many of her friends have responded to the latest picture that she had put up. I mean, she basically is heads down the entire trip home, and it's only 12 minutes, but there's not a word. Because she's completely consumed in this other environment. So, but that's where all her friends are hanging out. So that's where she is. And she's on it the moment she wakes up in the morning. She's on it at school whenever she can sneak it. You know, she's on it while her sister's building crafts out of beads. She's on it all the time. And if she gets away from it, like to watch a movie or something like that, then, you know, when she powers it back up, she might have, they said, 64 unread messages. Because it's just this constant chatter that's going back and forth. And, you know, the best thing for her on it is what's happening in the notification box. So when she uploads something, she wants to have at least 100 likes on it. And if she doesn't, well, you know, she may take those pictures down because they just weren't very popular. She has 604 followers, you know, and there's only 25 photos on her page because most of it gets deleted, because if it's not instantly popular, out. The article goes on to say that neurologists are very interested in what's going on as well, and they are, you know, doing all kinds of studies trying to figure out what this is doing to Generation Z, which I don't know if that stands for Generation Zombie or it means that the world is coming to an end, because I don't know what comes after Z. Except maybe AA, and we start all over again. You know, and this generation, and a lot of people who are screen addicted, for educators, it poses some challenges, because the easy thought is that, well, everything's just Googleable anyway, so why should I bother learning stuff when I can just look it up on Google? You know, the internet has really done some extremely interesting things to our society. So why shouldn't we just spend all our time? You know, the article goes on, and the girl is talking about one of her friends that always gets a ton of likes on her pictures and how smart she is about, she'll tell people, you know, if you like my picture, I'll give you a TBH. I wasn't familiar with the term. Apparently, TBH means to be honest or to be heard. And so you want someone to give you a TBH because supposedly that means they're really telling the truth. So if you like her picture, then, you know, and say, oh, you really look pretty in this, then she'll write back on your page, well, TBH, you're very pretty as well. And of course, if enough people do that, that must mean that you're pretty. Yeah, okay. So, anyways, so stuff is going on, you know. One of the things, big deals, is happy birthday posts. You know, if somebody cares enough to post a happy birthday post on your page, they must really like you. And so, you know, there's all these unspoken rules of etiquette about what you should do, what you shouldn't do. This particular young lady, her mother died of breast cancer, which was very sad. And so her dad is trying to navigate this. And at one point, they got her a phone just so the young lady could be informed of what was going on. Of course, the dad is trying to figure out how to get her to use less. At one point, she didn't have caps on her phone, and so she used like 18 gigabytes of data in 1 month. And his plan, you know, it was maxed out at 10, and so of course he had to pay the extra, and he's capped her out at 4 gig at this point. And the article goes on to say how that some of Katie's very best friends have never been to her house, or she to theirs. To the dad, it seems like they rarely ever hang out, but he knows that to her, it seems like they're together all the time. He tries to watch what she sends, pictures of their family, pictures of their cat, but he's not sure what her friends or whoever she's following are sending back. Checks the phone bill, see how much who she's been texting. She barely calls anyone. And most of her chats through Snapchat, of course, disappear. You know, he's already had another dad suggest parental controls. But he tried to do that, and then there was some reason he had to try it off and shut it off. You know, he's trying to make his way. And she's involved on the social media where all her friends are. And she's working really hard to get as many likes as she can. Talked about the fact that at one point, her username on Snapchat was something that she was embarrassed about because it was a little kitty name. So because of that, then she decided, oh yeah, I've got to change that. So she took out a new username on Snapchat. Unfortunately, that meant that her score that says how many times she's used this and how many times she's done that reverted to zero, which for her was really embarrassing because, you know, it's a trust factor, it's a reputation factor, all that kind of stuff. And so for a while there, she was just sending chats like snaps like crazy. So she was adding 1,000 points a day to her Snapchat score, because she needed to get that reputation up. You know, and so it goes on, and she is conforming her behavior to, you know, what's expected and how to work the system and how to make sure, oh, just checking my mail, you know, how to make sure that she's presenting correctly. Because it's all a system. And, you know, I wish the article would have come to some great conclusion, frankly. But it's all kind of up in the air at this point. Although, the YouTube video I was watching, I think, makes some tremendous points. And I think we can say easily and definitively that social media will affect us. It will change our brains. I'm backing into my garage. And if we aren't careful, the result of all that change will not be positive. I think we can say that fairly definitively. The effect of technology over time, while it has made our lives more convenient and seemingly more controlled and more comfortable, I think overall there are things that it has caused as well. And I think one of the easiest ways to see the manifestation of that is our emergence as a society where we are extremely easy to offend. And I think that's indicative of something. And maybe the YouTube video really starts hinting at what's going on, and maybe more than hinting, puts its finger on the types of things that are going on. The YouTube video was called "I Share, Therefore I Am." The innovation of loneliness. It was pretty interesting. The guy starts off talking about monkey social life and how that a typical tribe of monkey has between 20 and 50 people in it. When it reaches that kind of 50 monkey threshold, it begins to disintegrate, and then it reforms and starts building again. He said, humans, and he made this statement, humans with language and gossip are able to manage larger, more stable groups, which is interesting, language and gossip. But he said there's multiple sociological studies that have pegged the maximum at about 150, which I had a little side thought when I heard that, you know, oh, well, that's like a small church. And churches have very interesting growth patterns of when they move above that. How do people deal with, you know, you really, once you get so large, there's just not really much of ways that you can know other people. That's a whole side thing. Anyways, he said in it that humans do seem to be incapable of having any kind of tight-knit sociological structure that exceeds 150. And he said, so, you know, in our normal state, if we were just out with tribes and doing that kind of stuff, we would be forming into these kind of groups, and we would find value and belonging and fellowship in these groups. He said, but as technology has progressed, as the type of existence we are living has progressed, there's been the tendency for people to shift their focus from considering connections with others as valuable to focusing more on self-actualization and certain pursuits like achievements, career, wealth, consumerism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said, we have lost our social connections in favor of self-actualization. And he said, thus, loneliness has become an innovation in our age. It is that which we have, by our actions, promoted as a fairly normal standard of behavior. He said, in addition to all of that, and this is where it started getting interesting for me, the whole social network has rearranged how we pursue social encounters. And he said it's made it easier. And he said, frankly, we value now quantity over quality of interactions. You know, we don't have true conversations. We just have a transient connection. So because true conversations, and I absolutely believe this, take place in real time. You're sitting across from someone. Your phones are down. You're having a conversation. You're listening. The other person is talking. You're sharing. They're sharing. You're learning together. This is one of the things I love about going out to a meal with someone, is that you get this opportunity to say, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you think about that? Or just, hey, how's your family doing? You know, and what's going on? How's your work? How's your, you know, you doing okay? You know, read anything interesting? You know, just that whole. And the guy says on the YouTube video, one of the components, one of the qualities that these type of real conversations have is that if you're controlling it, you're really not having a conversation. It's a monologue. And if I go out to lunch or breakfast or dinner with somebody and I'm just completely monopolizing the conversation, it's not really a conversation. It's a monologue. Like this podcast. This is a monologue. He said on the YouTube video that all the social networks, one of the key points is that they allow us to edit so we can pick the right picture. We can take the right selfie from the right angles, and we can keep discarding stuff until we have just the right expression on our face. We can go through revision after revision after revision of what we're going to post on Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and all those things till we're ready. And we can just portray the picture of what we want everyone to think of us. We can craft our profile and promote that. He said one of the interesting things about all of this is that social networks and this ability to do this really have promoted three fantasies for us. The first fantasy is that we can put our attention where we want. That we can go through life always looking at experiencing the things that we want to experience. Second fantasy is that we will always be heard. Doesn't matter whether it's just look what I made for my meal, or look at the beautiful picture I saw. I was watching this TED Talk. It was fascinating about this guy that would spend an entire day, 18 hours, taking like 2,500 photographs of the exact same location with his camera pointed the exact same way. And then he would blend them all into a tableau so that you would actually see the entire day. And he would maybe go from left to right. So you'd start with the dawn on one side and, you know, nighttime on the other. And it was very interesting. And he had one that he had done of some big famous landmark. Almost every single person had their phone lifted up and they were taking pictures. And he said, I watched this all day, that people would come to this important landmark, and instead of looking at it and enjoying what was before them, they had a phone between them and it, and they were taking pictures so that they could tell people that they were there. And he said, it's interesting that we've reached the point now. And it was kind of this whole thing, I share, therefore I am. We've reached the point now where we have a kind of existence that's based on our sharing. And if we don't share, you know, we don't really exist in the moment. And the final fantasy this guy talked about, the first one was we can put our attention anywhere we want. The second one was we will always be heard. And the third one was we will never be alone. Therefore, I share. Therefore, I am. And he said, what you find is that people on the social networks are actually faking experiences so that they will have something to share. They are strategically editing photographs. They are carefully choosing words to not reflect what their life experience is, but what they want it to be, or how they want it to be presented. And I just can't see how that's going to be beneficial in the long run. Because the thing that I notice first about those three fantasies is it's all me. I will always be heard. I will never be lonely. I will be able to control where I want to put my attention. That's flesh. And while I do have a Facebook account and I do go out to Facebook and look through, and I do find a lot of interesting stuff on Facebook. I do limit how much time I spend on Facebook. But then I also make time to have real conversations. And I tell you that the real conversations I have with friends when we're having breakfast or we're having dinner, those conversations, I am more than happy to put down my phone and have those conversations because I get so much out of them. Because it is true conversation and true communication as opposed to me deciding what you get to see, deciding how I want to phrase things, deciding what pictures you'll have in your mind concerning me. Because in a very real way, social media is isolating, whereas encounters in real life are community. Now, I just saw on Facebook the other day that someone posted and said, yeah, there's people that are worried about, you know, us just spending all this time on Facebook, but I wouldn't know what's going on in anyone else's life if I wasn't on Facebook all the time. Do you really know what's going on in their life? Or are you only getting the sanitized version? Now, I do say that there are some people who are pretty grueling about, and pretty good, I should say, about posting real stuff. You know, we had cousin-in-laws that he was having terrible headaches, and they're in the hospital, and they're asking for prayer, and, you know, and there's other people that when they're going through stuff, but I know of other cousin-in-laws who have been through some tremendous stuff, and it was really quiet. So everybody's on the social networks. They are choosing, and I've got to wrap this up. They are choosing what to show and what to present, and they're doing it for whatever their agendas are. And that's up to them. Everybody gets to live their life any way they want to. But I think there is no question that the opportunity to sit down across from someone and have a real conversation far surpasses anything that's ever going to happen on any of the social media sites. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.